This is Audible.
Audible Studios presents Never Never Part 2, written by Colleen Hoover and Taryn Fisher, performed by Kevin Free and Elizabeth Evans.
1. Silas. It starts slowly. The rain. A splatter here, a splatter there. First on the windshield in front of me, and then against the windows surrounding me. The drops begin to sound like thousands of fingertips tapping the top of my car out of unison. Tap, 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 tap. The sound is all around me now. It feels like it's coming from inside me, trying to get out. The rain begins to trickle down the windshield, thick enough to mix together in long lines that resemble tears. They slide to the bottom and disappear beyond the glass. I attempt to turn my wipers on, but my car is off. Why isn't my car on? I wipe the fog off my window with the palm of my hand to see outside, but the rain is falling so hard now I can't see anything. Where am I? I turn around and look in the back seat, but there's no one there. Nothing there. I face forward again. Think. Where was I headed? I must have fallen asleep. I don't know where I am. I don't know where I am. Who am I? It seems so natural to think thoughts that contain the word I, but each of my thoughts are hollow and weightless because the word I is attached to no one. No name, no face. I am nothing. The hum of an engine steals my attention as a car slows next to mine on the road. Water splashes across the windshield as it passes. I make out taillights as the car slows and then pulls over in front of me. Reverse lights. My heart begins to beat in my throat, my fingertips, my temples. The lights atop the car breathe to life. Red, blue, red, blue. I watch as someone exits the vehicle. All I can make out is their silhouette as they begin to approach my car. I barely move my neck as they walk toward my passenger door, keeping my eyes trained on them as they reach the window. A tap. Tap, tap, tap. I press the ignition button to give power to the windows. How did I know how to do that? I roll the window down. A cop. Help, I want to say. I forgot where I was going, I want to say.
Silas?
His voice startles me. It's loud. He's trying to compete with the sound of the rain by yelling the word Silas. What does that word mean, Silas? Maybe he's French. Maybe I'm in France and Silas is a greeting. Maybe I should say Silas in return. The man clears his throat and then says, "Your car broke down?" Not French. I look at the controls on my dash. I force my lips apart so that I can form a word. Instead, I gasp for air, unaware I've been holding my breath. When I release the air in my lungs, it comes out shaky, embarrassing. "No," I say. My voice scares me. I don't recognize it. The officer leans down and motions to my lap.
"What you got there?"
he asks.
"Direction somewhere you lost?"
I look down at an unfamiliar stack of papers resting on my lap. I push them to the passenger seat, wanting them off me, and I shake my head again.
I was just...
My words are interrupted by a ring, a loud ring coming from inside the car. I follow the sound, moving the papers from the seat to find a cell phone beneath them. I look at the caller ID, Jeanette. I don't know a Jeanette.
"You need to get off the side of the road, son,"
the officer says, taking a step back. I push a button on the side of the phone to get it to silence.
"Go on ahead and get back to the school. Big game tonight."
Big game. School. Why does neither seem familiar? I nod.
"Rain should let up soon," he adds.
He taps the roof of my car as if he's sending me off. I nod again and put my finger on the button that controls the windows.
"Tell your father to save me a seat tonight."
I nod again. My father. The officer stares at me for a few seconds longer, a quizzical look on his face. He finally shakes his head and then begins to retreat back to his car. I look down at the phone. Just as I'm about to hit a button, it begins ringing again.
Jeanette.
Whoever Jeanette is, she really wants someone to answer this phone. I swipe the screen and bring it to my ear. Hello?
Did you find her?
I don't recognize the voice on the phone. I wait a few seconds before responding, hoping it clicks.
Silas, hello?
She just said the same word the officer said, Silas, except she said it like a name.
My name?
What? I say into the phone, confused by everything.
Did you find her?
There's panic in her voice.
Did I find her? Who am I supposed to be looking for?
I turn around and check the back seat once more, even though I know there isn't anyone in the car with me. I face forward again, not sure how to respond to the question just posed to me.
Did I find her? I ask, repeating the question.
Did you find her?
A groan comes from Jeanette. Why would I be calling you if I found her?
I pull the phone away from my ear and look at it. I'm so confused. I press it against my ear again. No, I say, I didn't find her. Maybe this girl is my little sister. She sounds young, younger than me. Maybe she lost her dog and I was out looking for her. Maybe I hydroplaned in the rain and hit my head.
Silas, this isn't like her, Jeanette says. She would tell me if she wasn't going to come home or show up for school today.
Okay, I guess we're not talking about a dog here. And the fact that I'm pretty sure we're discussing a person who is apparently missing makes me really uncomfortable, considering I'm not even sure who I am right now. I need to hang up before I say something wrong, something incriminating. Jeanette, I have to go. I'll keep looking. I press end and set the phone down on the seat next to me. The papers that were sitting on my lap catch my eye. I reach over and grab for them. The pages are stapled together, so I flip to the front page. It's a letter addressed to me and some other guy named Charlie. Charlie and Silas, if you don't know why you're reading this, then you've forgotten everything. What the hell? The first sentence isn't what I was expecting to read. I don't know what I was expecting to read. You recognize no one, not even yourselves. Please don't panic and read this letter in its entirety. It's a little late for the don't panic part. We aren't sure what happened, but we're afraid if we don't write it down, it might happen again. At least with everything written down and left in more than one place, we'll be more prepared if it does happen again. On the following pages, you'll find all the information we know. Maybe it will help in some way. Charlie and Silas. I don't immediately flip to the next page. I drop the pages in my lap and bring my hands to my face. I rub them up and down, up and down. I glance in the rearview mirror and then immediately look away when I don't recognize the eyes staring back at me. This can't be happening. I squeeze my eyes shut and bring my fingers to the bridge of my nose. I wait for myself to wake up. This is a dream, and I need to wake up. The car passes, and more water is tossed against the windshield. I watch as it trickles down again and disappears beneath the hood. I can't be dreaming. Everything is too vivid, too detailed to be a dream. Dreams are splotchy, and they don't flow from one moment to the next like everything is doing right now. I pick the pages up again, and with each sentence, it becomes harder to read. My hands become increasingly unsteady. My mind is all over the place as I scan over the next page. I find out Silas is definitely my name and that Charlie is actually the name of a girl. I wonder if she's the girl who's missing. I continue to read, even though I can't suspend disbelief long enough to accept the words I'm reading. And I don't know why I won't allow myself to believe it, because everything I'm reading certainly coincides with the fact that I have no recollection of any of it. It's just that if I were to suspend my disbelief, I would be admitting that this is possible, that according to what I'm reading, I've just lost my memory for the fourth time in a row. My breathing is almost as erratic as the rain falling against the roof of my car. I bring my left hand up to the back of my neck and squeeze as I read the last paragraph, one I apparently just wrote a matter of 10 minutes ago. Charlie got into a cab on Bourbon Street last night and no one has seen her since. She doesn't know about this letter. Find her. The first thing you need to do is find her. Please.
The last few words of the letter are scrawled, barely legible, like I was running out of time when I wrote it. I set the letter down on the seat, contemplating everything I've just learned. The information is racing in my mind faster than my heart is beating in my chest. I can feel the onset of a panic attack coming, or maybe a breakdown. I grip the steering wheel with both hands and breathe in and out through my nose. I don't know how I know that's supposed to produce a calming effect. At first, it doesn't seem to be working, but I sit like this for several minutes, thinking about everything I just learned. Bourbon Street. Charlie. My brother. The shrimp. The tarot reading. The tattoos. My penchant for photography. Why does none of it seem familiar? This has to be a joke. This has to be referring to someone else. I can't be Silas. If I were Silas, I would feel like I'm him. I wouldn't feel this complete separation from the person I'm supposed to be. I grab my phone again and open up the camera app. I lean forward and reach behind me, pulling my shirt forward and over my head. I hold the camera behind me and snap a picture of my back, then pull my shirt back into place and look at the phone. Pearls. A strand of black pearls is tattooed on my back, just like the letter said. Shit, I whisper, staring down at the picture. My stomach. I think I'm about to be. I open up the car door just in time. The contents of whatever I had for breakfast are now on the ground at my feet. My clothes are being soaked as I stand here, waiting to get sick again. When I think the worst is over, I climb back into the car. I look at the clock, and it reads 11:11 a.m. I'm still not sure what to believe, but the more time that passes without recollection, the more I begin to entertain the idea that I may have just a little over 47 hours before this happens again. I reach across the seat and open my glove box. I don't know what I'm looking for, but sitting here doing nothing seems like a waste of time. I pull out the contents, tossing aside vehicle and insurance information. I find an envelope with our names written across it, a duplicate of everything I just read. I continue to flip through the papers until a folded piece of paper tucked at the very bottom of the glove box steals my attention. It has my name written across the top of it. I open it, first reading the signature at the bottom. It's a letter from Charlie. I start back at the top of the page and begin reading. Dear Silas, this is not a love note, okay? No matter how much you try to convince yourself that it is, it's not. Because I'm not that type of girl. I hate those girls, always so lovesick and disgusting. Ew. Anyway, this is the anti-love note. For instance, I do not love the way you brought me orange juice and medicine last week when I was sick. And what was with that card? You hope I feel better and you love me? Pfft. And I definitely do not love the way you pretend that you can dance when you really look like a malfunctioning robot. It's not adorable, and it doesn't make me laugh at all. Oh, and when you kiss me and pull away to tell me I'm pretty, don't like that one damn bit. Why can't you just be like other guys who ignore their girlfriends? It's so unfair that I have to deal with this. And speaking of how you do everything wrong, remember when I hurt my back during cheerleading practice, and you skipped David's party to rub biofreeze on my back and watched Pretty Woman with me? It was a clear sign of how needy and selfish you can really be. How dare you, Silas? I will also no longer tolerate the things you say about me around our friends. When Abby made fun of my outfit that day and you told her that I could wear a plastic bag and make it look couture, it was way out of line. And it was even more way out of line when you drove Jeanette to the eye doctor when she kept getting headaches. You need to get a grip. All of this caring and consideration is so unattractive. So I am here to tell you that I absolutely do not love you more than any human on this planet, and that it's not butterflies I feel every time you walk into a room, but sick, one-winged, drunken moths. Also, you're very, very unattractive. I flinch every time I see your unblemished skin and think, oh my God, that kid would be so much more attractive with some pimples and crooked teeth. Yeah, you're gross, Silas. Not in love. Not at all. Never, never. Charlie. I stare at the way she signed off and read those words through a few more times. Not in love. Not at all. Never, never. Charlie. I flip the note over, hoping to see a date. There's nothing to indicate when it was written. If this girl wrote me letters like this, then how could everything I just read in my notes about the current state of our relationship even be true? I'm obviously in love with her, or at least I was in love with her. What happened to us? What happened to her? I fold the letter up and put it back where I found it. The first place I go is to the address listed on the paper for Charlie's house. If I don't find her there, maybe I can get more information from her mother or from anything I can find that we might have overlooked before. The garage door is shut when I pull into her driveway. I can't tell if anyone is home. The place is grungy. Someone's trash can sits sideways next to the curb, trash spilling out onto the street. A cat is pawing at the bag. When I step out of the car, the cat dashes down the street. I look around as I make my way to the front door. No one is around. The neighbors' windows and doors are all shut tight. I knock several times, but no one answers. I look around one last time before I turn the knob. Unlocked. I quietly push the door open. In the letters we wrote to ourselves, we mentioned Charlie's attic a few times, so that's the first place I search for, Charlie's attic. I'm meeting the attic before I meet the girl. One of the doors is open in the hallway. I walk in and find the bedroom empty, two beds. This must be where Charlie and her sister sleep. I walk to the closet and look up at the ceiling, finding the entrance to the attic. I push clothes aside, and a smell fills my nose. Her smell? Floral. It smells familiar, but that's crazy, right? If I can't remember her, I can't possibly remember her smell. I use the closet shelves as stairs and make my way up. The only light inside the attic comes from the window on the other side of the room. It's enough to illuminate where I'm going, but not by much, so I pull out my phone and open the flashlight app. I pause and stare down at the open app on my phone. How did I know that was there? I wish there were rhyme or reason to why we remember some things and not others. Try to find a common link in the memories, but come up completely empty. I have to hunch over because the ceiling is too low for me to stand upright. I continue across the attic toward a makeshift sitting area on the far side of the room. There's a pile of blankets lined with pillows. She actually sleeps up here? I shudder, trying to imagine anyone willingly spending time in a place this isolated. She must be a loner. I have to bend over more to avoid hitting my head on the rafters. When I reach the area she's made up for herself, I look around. There are stacks of books beside the pillows. Some of the books she uses as tables, topped with picture frames. Dozens of books. I wonder if she's read them all, or if she just needs them for comfort. Maybe she uses them as an escape from her real life. From the looks of this place, I don't blame her. I bend down and pick one up. The cover is dark, of a house and a girl merging together as one. It's creepy. I can't imagine sitting up here alone, reading books like this in the dark. I set the book down where I found it, and my attention falls on a cedar chest pushed up against the wall. It looks heavy and old, like maybe it's something that's been passed down in her family. I walk over to it and open the lid. Inside, there are several books, all with blank covers. I pick up the top one and open it. January 7th to July 15th, 2011. I flip through the pages and see that it's a journal. In the box beneath this one, there are at least five more. She must love to write. I look around, lifting pillows and blankets, searching for something to put the journals in. If I want to find this girl, I need to know where she frequents, places she might be, people she might know. Journals are the perfect way to find out that information. I find an empty, worn backpack on the floor a few feet away, so I grab it and stuff all the journals inside. I begin pushing things aside, shaking out books, looking around for anything and everything that might help me. I find several letters in various places, a few stacks of pictures, random sticky notes. I take everything I can fit into the backpack and make my way back to the attic opening. I know there are also a few things in the bedroom at my own house, so I'll go there next and sort through it all as fast as I can. When I reach the opening, I drop the backpack through the attic hole first. It hits the ground with a loud thud, and I flinch, knowing I should be quieter. I begin to descend the shelves one by one, trying to imagine Charlie making the journey up and down these makeshift stairs every night. Her life must be pretty bad if she escapes to the attic by choice. When I make it to the bottom, I grab the backpack and stand up straight. I pull it over my shoulder and start toward the door. I freeze. I'm not sure what to do because the officer who tapped on my window earlier is now staring straight at me. Is being inside my girlfriend's house illegal? A woman appears in the doorway behind the officer. Her eyes are frantic and they're lined with mascara, like she just woke up. Her hair is wild, and even from several feet away, the scent of alcohol finds its way across the room.
"I told you he was up there," she yells, pointing at me. "I warned him just this morning to stay off my property, and he's back again."
This morning? Great. Wish I had informed myself of that fact in the letter. "Silas," the officer says, "you mind coming outside with me?" I nod and proceed cautiously toward them. It doesn't seem like I've done anything wrong since he's only asking me to speak with him. If I did anything wrong, he would have immediately read me my rights.
"He knows he's not supposed to be here, Grant,"
the woman yells, walking backward down the hall toward the living room.
"He knows this, but he keeps coming back. He's just trying to get a rise out of me."
This woman hates me a lot, and not knowing why makes it hard not to just apologize for whatever the hell I did to her. "Laura," he says, "I'll have a talk with Silas outside, but you need to calm down and move aside so that I can do that." She steps to the side and glares at me as we pass her.
"You get away with everything, just like your daddy," she says.
I look away from her so she won't see the confusion on my face, and I follow Officer Grant outside, clutching the backpack over my shoulder. Luckily, the rain has let up. We keep walking until we're standing next to my car. He turns to face me, and I have no idea if I'll be able to answer the questions he's about to throw at me, but hopefully they aren't too specific.
"Why are you not at school, Silas?"
I purse my lips together and think about the answer to that. I look over his shoulder at a passing car. "I'm looking for Charlie." I don't know if I should have said that. Surely if the cops weren't supposed to know she was missing, I would have clarified that in the letter. But the letter only stated that I needed to do whatever I could to find her, and reporting her missing seems like it would be the first step.
"What do you mean you're looking for her? Why isn't she at school?"
I shrug. "I don't know. She hasn't called. Her sister hasn't heard from her. She didn't show up for school today." I throw a hand behind me in the direction of the house. Her own mother is obviously too drunk to notice she's missing, so I thought I'd try to find her myself. He tilts his head, more out of curiosity than concern.
"Who was the last person to see her? And when?"
I swallow as I shift uncomfortably on my feet, trying to recall what was written about last night in the letter. "Me. Last night. We got into an argument and she refused to ride home with me." Officer Grant motions for someone behind me to come toward us. I turn around and Charlie's mother is standing in the open doorway. She crosses the threshold and makes her way out to the yard.
"Laura, do you know where your daughter is?"
She rolls her eyes.
"She's at school where she's supposed to be."
"She is not," I interject. Officer Grant keeps his eyes trained on Laura.
"Did Charlie come home last night?"
Laura glances at me and then looks back at the officer.
"Of course she did," she says.
Her voice tapers off at the end like she's not sure. "She's lying," I blurt out. Officer Grant holds up a hand to hush me, still directing his questions at Laura.
"What time did she come home?"
I can see the confusion wash over Laura's face. She shrugs.
"I grounded her for skipping school this week, so she was up in her attic, I guess."
I roll my eyes. "She wasn't even home," I say, raising my voice. "This woman was obviously too drunk to know if her own daughter was even inside the house." She closes the distance between us and begins pounding her fists against my arms and chest.
"Get off my property, you son of a bitch," she screams.
The officer grabs her by the arms and motions his eyes to my truck.
"For the last time, Nash, go back to school."
Laura is thrashing in his arms, trying to break free. She's not even phasing him as he keeps her in a tight grip. This seems so normal to him. It makes me wonder if she's called the cops on me before. But what about Charlie? I'm confused as to why no one else seems to be concerned about her, especially her own mother. Like her mother said, she's probably at school, he says. At any rate, she'll show up to the game tonight. We'll talk there. I nod, but I know good and well I'm not going back to the school. I'm taking my bag of Charlie's secrets, and I'm going straight to my house to find more. 2. Silas. The first thing I do when I walk through the door to my home is pause. None of it looks familiar, not even the pictures on the walls. I wait for a few seconds, letting everything sink in. I could search the house or browse the pictures, but I've probably already done that. I'm on a time crunch, and if I want to figure out what happened to Charlie, what happened to us, I need to keep focused on the things we haven't wasted time doing before. I find my bedroom and walk straight to the closet, to the shelf that contains all the other stuff we've collected. I dump everything out onto my bed, including the contents of the duffel bag. Sifting through it all, I try to figure out where to begin. There's so much stuff. I grab a pen so I can make notes of anything I find that might be of use if I end up forgetting this all over again. I know a lot of things about my relationship with Charlie as of late, but that seems to be it. I know almost nothing about how we got together or how our families were torn apart. I don't know if any of that is even a factor in what's happened to us, but I feel like the best place to start is from the beginning. I grab one of the older-looking notes addressed to Charlie, something I wrote myself. It's dated over 4 years ago and is just one of the many letters I grabbed from her attic. Maybe reading something from my point of view will help me figure out what type of person I am, even if this letter is over 4 years old. I sit down on the bed and then lean against my headboard, and I begin to read. Charlie, can you recall a single time we went on vacation without each other? I've been thinking about that today. About how it's never just my immediate family and me. It's always both sets of our parents, Landon, Jeanette, you, and me, one big happy family. I'm not sure we've ever spent a holiday apart either, Christmas, Easter, Thanksgiving. We've always shared them together, either at our house or yours. Maybe that's why I've never felt like it's just been my little brother and me. I've always felt like I had a brother and two sisters, and I can't imagine not feeling that way, like you're part of my family. But I'm scared that I've ruined that. And I don't even know what to say to you because I don't want to apologize for kissing you last night. I know I should regret it, and I know I should be doing whatever I can to make up for the fact that I might have officially ruined our friendship, but I don't regret it. I've wanted to make that mistake for a long time now. I've been trying to figure out when my feelings for you changed, but I realized tonight that they haven't changed. My feelings for you as my best friend haven't changed at all. They've just evolved. Yes, I love you, but now I'm in love with you. And instead of looking at you like you're just my best friend, now you're my best friend who I want to kiss. And yes, I've loved you like a brother loves his sister, but now I love you like a guy loves a girl. So despite that kiss, I promise nothing has changed between us. It's just become something more, something so much better. Last night, when you were lying next to me on this bed, looking up at me in breathless laughter, I couldn't help myself. So many times you've taken my breath away or made it feel like my heart was trapped inside my stomach. But last night was more than any 14-year-old boy could handle, so I took your face in my hands and I kissed you, just like I've been dreaming of doing for over a year now. Lately, when I'm around you, I feel too drunk to speak to you. And I've never even tasted alcohol before, but I'm sure kissing you is what being drunk feels like. If that's the case, I'm already worried for my sobriety because I can see myself becoming addicted to kissing you. I haven't heard from you since the moment you pulled yourself out from under me and walked straight out of my bedroom last night, so I'm beginning to worry that you don't remember that kiss like I do. You haven't answered your phone. You haven't responded to my texts. So I'm writing you this letter in case you need to be reminded of how you really feel about me, because it seems like you're trying to forget. Please don't forget, Charlie.
Never allow your stubbornness to talk you into believing that our kiss was wrong. Never forget how right it felt when my lips finally touched yours. Never stop needing me to kiss you like that again. Never forget the way you pulled closer, wanting it to feel like my heart was beating inside your chest. Never stop me from kissing you in the future when one of your laughs makes me wish I could be a part of you again. Never stop wanting me to hold you like I finally got to hold you last night. Never forget that I was your first real kiss. Never forget that you'll be my last. And never stop loving me between all of them. Never stop, Charlie. Never forget, Silas. I don't know how long I stare at the letter, long enough to grow confused as to how it makes me feel. How even though I don't know this girl at all, I somehow believe every word of this letter, and maybe even feel it a little. My pulse begins to quicken because I've done all I know how to do in the past hour to find her, and the need to know she's okay is imminent. I'm worried about her. I need to find her. I grab another letter for more clues when my phone rings. I pick it up and answer it without looking at the caller ID. There's no point in screening the call since I don't know any of the people who would even be calling me. Hello?
You do realize tonight is one of the most important games of your football career, right? Why in the hell are you not at school?
The voice is heavy and angry. Must be my father. I pull the phone away from my ear and look down at it. I have no idea what to say. I need to read more of these letters before I would know how Silas would normally respond to his father. I need to find out more about these people who seem to know everything about me. Hello? I repeat.
Silas, I don't know what's gotten...
I can't hear you, I say louder. Hello? Before he can speak again, I end the call and drop the phone onto the bed. I grab all of the letters and journals that'll fit into the backpack. I rush to leave because I shouldn't be here. Someone might show up who I'm not prepared to interact with yet. Someone like my father.
3. Charlie. Where am I? That's the first question. Then, who am I? I shake my head from side to side, like this simple act could jar my brain back into working order. People normally wake up and know who they are, right? My heart aches, it's pounding so fast. I'm scared to sit up, afraid of what I'll see when I do. I'm confused, overwhelmed, so I start to cry. Is it weird to not know who you are, but to understand that you're not a crier? I am so mad at myself for crying that I swipe hard at my tears and sit up, banging my head pretty hard on the metal bars of a bed in the process. I flinch, rubbing my head. I'm alone. That's good. I don't know how I'd explain to someone that I have no clue who or where I am. I'm on a bed, in a room. It's hard to tell what kind of room because it's so dark. No windows. A bulb flickers on the ceiling and a struggling Morse code. It's not strong enough to really illuminate the small room, but I can tell that the floor is made of shiny white tile and the walls are painted white. Bare except for a small television bolted to the wall. There is a door. I stand up to go to it, but there is a heavy feeling in my stomach as I place my feet one in front of the other. It's going to be locked. It's going to be locked. It's locked. I feel panic, but I calm myself, telling myself to breathe. I'm shaking as I press my back against the door and look down at my body. I'm wearing a hospital gown. Socks. I run my hands over my legs to check how hairy they are. Not very. Which means I've shaved recently. I have black hair. I pull a piece of it in front of my face to examine it. I don't even know my name. This is crazy. Or maybe I'm crazy. Yes. Oh my God. I'm in a mental hospital. That's the only thing that makes sense. I turn around and pound on the door. Hello? I press my ear against the door and listen for a noise. I can hear the soft humming of something. A generator? An air conditioner? It's some kind of machinery. I get chills. I run for the bed and fold myself in the corner so I can see the door. I pull my knees up to my chest, breathing hard. I'm scared. But there's nothing I can do but wait.
4. Silas. The strap of my backpack digs into my shoulder as I push myself through the swarm of students in the hallway. I pretend I know what I'm doing, where I'm going, but I know nothing. As far as I'm concerned, this is the first time I've ever stepped foot in this school. The first time I'm seeing these people's faces. They smile at me, bob their heads in greeting. I reciprocate the best I can. I glance up at the numbers on the lockers, navigating my way through the halls until I find mine. According to everything I wrote, I was here just this morning, searching through this locker, hours ago. I obviously didn't find anything then, so I'm sure I won't find anything now. When I'm finally facing my locker, I feel the hope that I didn't even know I had evaporate. I guess a part of me was hoping I would find Charlie standing there, laughing at this genius prank she pulled off. I was hopeful that this mess would be over with. I'm not that lucky, obviously. I enter the combination on Charlie's locker first and open it in an attempt to find something we missed earlier. As I'm digging through her locker, I can feel someone approach me from behind. I don't want to turn around and have to interact with an unfamiliar face, so I pretend I don't notice they're standing here in hopes that they'll walk away.
What are you looking for?
It's a girl's voice. Since I have no idea what Charlie sounds like, I turn around, hoping it's her. Instead, I find someone who isn't Charlie staring back at me. Based on her looks, I assume this is Annika. She fits the description Charlie wrote of our friends in the notes. Big eyes, dark curly hair, looks at you like she's bored. I'm just looking for something, I mutter, turning back to face Charlie's locker. I find no clues whatsoever, so I close the locker and begin to enter the combination on my own lock.
Amy said Charlie wasn't home this morning when she went to pick her up. Jeanette didn't even know where she was, Annika says. Where is she?
I shrug and pull open my locker, trying to make it inconspicuous that I'm reading the combination from a sheet of paper in my hand. I don't know, still haven't heard from her. Annika stands silently behind me until I'm finished searching my own locker. My phone begins to ring in my pocket. My father is calling again. Silas! Someone yells as he passes by. I look up to see a reflection of myself, only younger and not as intense. Landon. Dad wants you to call him, he yells, walking backward in the opposite direction. I hold up my phone, screen facing him so he knows I'm already aware. He shakes his head with a laugh and disappears down the hall. I want to tell him to come back. I have so many questions I want to ask him, but I know how crazy all of it would sound. I press a button to ignore the call, and I slide it back into my pocket. Annika is still standing here, and I have no idea how to shake her. The old Silas seemed to have an issue with commitment, so I'm hoping Annika wasn't one of his conquests. The old me is sure making things difficult for the current me. Right when I begin to tell her I need to get to my last period class, I catch sight of a girl over Annika's shoulder. My eyes lock with hers, and she quickly looks in the other direction. I can tell by the way she slinks away that she must be the girl Charlie referred to as the shrimp in our notes, because she really does kind of resemble a shrimp. Pinkish skin, light hair, and dark, beady eyes. Hey, I yell. She keeps moving in the other direction. I push past Annika and rush after the girl. I yell, hey, again, but she just picks up her pace and tucks into herself even more, never turning around. I should know her name. She'd probably stop if I just called out her name. I'm sure if I yelled, hey, shrimp, that wouldn't win me any favors. What a nickname. Teenagers can be so cruel. I'm embarrassed to be one of them. Right before her hand reaches the doorknob of a classroom, I slide in front of her, my back against the door. She takes a quick step back, surprised to see me directing my attention at her. She hugs her books to her chest and glances around, but we've reached the end of the hallway and there aren't any students around us.
What do you want?
She asks, her voice a scattered whisper. Have you seen Charlie? The question seems to surprise her more than the fact that I'm talking to her. She immediately distances herself from me with another step.
What do you mean?
She asks again.
She's not looking for me, is she?
Her voice sounds fearful. Why would she be afraid of Charlie? Listen, I say, glancing down the hallway to ensure our privacy. I look back at her and can tell she's holding her breath. I need a favor, but I don't want to talk about it here. Can you meet me after school? Again with a surprised expression, she immediately shakes her head no. Her hesitance to want to have anything to do with Charlie or me piques my interest. She either knows something and she's hiding it, or she knows something that she has no idea could help me. Just for a few minutes, I ask. She shakes her head again when someone begins walking in our direction. I cut the conversation short and don't give her a chance to say no again. Meet me at my locker after class. I have a couple of questions, I say before walking away. I don't look back at her. I head down the hallway but have no idea where I'm actually going. I should probably go to the athletic department and find my locker there. According to what I read in our notes, there's a letter I haven't read yet in the locker room, along with some pictures. I round the corner in a hurry and bump into a girl, causing her to drop her purse. I mutter an apology and step around her, continuing down the hallway.
Silas! She yells.
I pause. Crap. I have no idea who she is. I slowly turn on my heels and she's standing upright, pulling her purse strap higher up on her shoulder. I wait for her to say something else, but she just stares at me. After a few seconds, she throws her palms up in the air.
Well?
She says, frustrated. I tilt my head in confusion. Is she expecting an apology? Well, what? She huffs and folds her arms over her chest.
Did you find my sister?
Jeanette, this is Charlie's sister, Jeanette. Crap.
I can imagine it's hard enough searching for a missing person, but trying to search for them when you have no idea who you are, who they are, or who anyone else is, kind of feels like shooting for the impossible.
Not yet, I tell her. Still looking. You? She takes a step toward me and tucks her chin in.
Don't you think if I found her, I wouldn't have asked you if you found her?
I take a step back, putting a safe distance between that glare and me.
Okay, so Jeanette is not a very pleasant person. I should write that in the notes for future reference.
She pulls a phone from her purse.
I'm calling the police, she says. I'm really worried about her.
I already spoke to the police. She darts her eyes up to mine.
When? What did they say?
I was at your house. Your mother called the police when she found me in the attic looking for Charlie. I told the officer she's been missing since last night, but your mother made it sound like I was overreacting, so they didn't take it seriously. Jeanette groans.
Figures,
she says.
Well, I'm calling them again. I need to go outside to get a better signal. I'll let you know what they say.
She steps around me to head outside. Once she's gone, I head in the direction of where I think the athletic building might be.
Silas, someone says from behind me.
Are you kidding me? Can I not make it 5 feet in this hallway without having to answer to someone? I turn to face whoever is wasting my time, only to find a girl, or woman, rather, who perfectly matches the description of Avril Ashley. This is exactly what I don't need right now.
Can I see you in my office, please?
I squeeze the back of my neck and shake my head. I can't, Avril. She reveals nothing of what is going through her head. She stares at me with a stoic expression and then says,
My office. Now.
She turns on her heels and heads down the hall. I contemplate running in the other direction, but drawing attention to myself won't do me any favors. I reluctantly follow her until she reaches the door to administration. I follow her past the secretary and into an office. I step aside as she closes the door, but I don't sit. I'm watching her carefully, and she still hasn't looked back at me. She makes her way to the window and stares outside, wrapping her arms around herself. The silence is awkward at best.
Do you want to explain what happened Friday night?
She asks.
I immediately begin searching my infant memory for what she could be talking about. Friday, Friday, Friday. Without my notes in front of me, I come up empty. There's no way I can remember every detail of what I've read in the past 2 hours. When I fail to respond, she lets out a soft laugh.
You are unreal,
she says, turning to face me now. Her eyes are red, but so far they're dry.
What in the world possessed you to punch my father?
Oh, the diner. The fight with the owner, Brian's father. Wait. I stand up straighter, the hairs prickling up across the skin of my neck. Avril Ashley is Brian Finley's sister? How is that even possible? And why would Charlie and I be involved with them?
Did it have to do with her?
She asks. She's throwing too much at me at once. I grip the back of my neck with my hands again and squeeze away some of the nerves. She doesn't seem to care that I'm not in the mood to discuss this right now. She takes several quick steps toward me until her finger is poking me in the chest.
My father was offering her a job, you know. I don't know what you're up to, Silas.
She spins and walks back to the window, but then throws her hands up in frustration and faces me.
First, you waltz in here 3 weeks ago and act like Charlie is destroying your life because of her involvement with Brian. You make me feel sorry for you. You even make me feel guilty just for being his sister. And then you use that to manipulate me into kissing you, and once I finally cave, you show up every single day for more. Then you go to my father's restaurant and attack him, then follow that up by breaking things off with me.
She takes a step back and puts her hand against her forehead.
Do you realize how much trouble I could be in, Silas?
She begins pacing back and forth.
I liked you. I risked my job for you. Hell, I risked my relationship with my own brother for you.
She stares up at the ceiling, placing her hands on her hips.
I'm an idiot, she says. I'm married. I'm a married woman with a degree, and here I am messing around with a student simply because he's attractive, and I'm too damn foolish to know when someone is using me.
Information overload. I can't even respond as everything she just said sinks in.
If you tell anyone about this, I'll make sure my father presses charges against you,
she says with a threatening glare. I find my tongue with that comment. I'll never tell anyone, Avril. You know that. Does she know that? The old me didn't seem to be very trustworthy. She keeps her eyes locked with mine for several moments until she seems satisfied with my response.
Leave. And if you need a counselor for the rest of the school year, do us both a favor and transfer schools.
I put my hand on the doorknob and wait for her to say something else. When she doesn't, I try and make up for the old Silas. For what it's worth, I'm sorry. Her lips press into a tight line. She spins and walks angrily to her desk.
Get the hell out of my office, Silas.
Gladly.
5. Charlie. I must have drifted off. I hear a soft beep, and then the sound of metal sliding against metal. My eyes snap open, and instinctually I press myself harder against the wall. I can't believe I fell asleep. They had to have drugged me. They. I'm about to find out who they are. The door opens, and my breathing gets faster as I squirm against the wall. A foot, plain white tennis shoes. And then, the smiling face of a woman. She comes in humming, kicking the door closed behind her. I relax a little. She looks like a nurse, dressed in pale yellow scrubs. Her hair is dark and pulled back in a low ponytail. She's older, maybe in her 40s. For a brief second, I wonder how old I am. My hand travels up to my face, as if I could feel my age on my skin. Hello, she says cheerfully. She hasn't looked at me yet. She's busying herself with the tray of food. I wrap my arms tighter around my knees. She sets a tray down on a little table next to the bed and glances up for the first time, I brought your lunch. Are you hungry? Lunch? I wonder what happened to breakfast. When I still don't answer, she smiles and lifts the lid off one of the plates as if to tempt me. It's spaghetti today, she says. You like spaghetti. Today? Like, how many days have I been here? I want to ask her, but my tongue is frozen in fear. You're confused. That's okay. You're safe here, she says. Funny, I don't feel safe. She offers me a paper cup. I stare at it. You have to take your meds, she says, shaking the cup. I can hear the rattling of more than one pill inside. I am being drugged. What's it for? I startle at the sound of my voice. Raspy. I haven't used it in a while, or I've been screaming a lot. She smiles again. The usual, silly. She frowns down at me, suddenly serious. We know what happens when you don't take your medications, Sammy. You don't want to go down that path again. Sammy. I want to cry because I have a name. I reach for the cup. I don't know what she means, but I don't want to go down that path again. That path is probably why I'm here. Where am I? I ask. There are three pills. One white, one blue, one brown. She cocks her head to the side as she hands me a plastic cup of water. You're in the St. Bartholomew Hospital. Don't you remember? I stare at her. Am I supposed to? If I ask her questions, she may think I'm crazy, and by the looks of things, I may already be crazy. I don't want to make things worse, but... She sighs. Look, I'm trying really hard with you, kid, but you have to do better this time. We can't have any more incidents. I'm a kid. I cause incidents. That must be why I'm locked up here. I tilt the cup till I feel the pills on my tongue. She hands me the water and I drink it. I'm thirsty. Eat up, she says, clapping her hands together. I pull the tray toward me. I am very hungry. Would you like to watch some television? I nod. She's really nice, and I would like to watch television. She pulls a remote control out of her pocket and switches it on. The show is about a family. They are all sitting around a table having dinner. Where is my family? I'm starting to feel sleepy again.
6. Silas. It's amazing how much I can learn just by keeping my mouth shut. Avril and Brian are brother and sister. Avril is married, yet I somehow still talked her into some sort of jacked-up relationship. And it's fairly new, which I didn't expect. It also seems odd that I would have gone to her for comfort knowing Charlie and Brian were together. Based on what I've learned of Silas, or myself, I don't see me wanting